As the dust starts to settle, we start to settle our bets on who went where. Analysis continues with Trade Deadline 2011 on Sportsnet Radio. The Fan 590.
I'll just get this straight. We have the TV lights on in here, but we're not doing TV, right?
Okay. I believe that's true.
Just radio.
Can we turn the lights off then?
Well, I guess you could. Why? Are they too bright for you? Want some sunglasses?
The glare off my head might be a bit strong.
The impact is to us, not to you.
Right.
By the way, Stephen Brunt wants it known to all his family and friends that
yes.
This will be his final segment
on the
program for today.
I'm coming home.
I suggest you contribute something then.
Okay. Well, I'll do my best.
All right.
Baby's been working since 9:30 this morning.
Have I complained?
Yeah, nonstop,
no,
all day.
I think that comes back to that original issue, contractual obligation.
Yes, that's right. Actually, I don't think I'm not actually technically contractually obligated until tomorrow. Tomorrow's March 1st, right?
Oh.
Was that the beginning of your deal?
I think this was a freebie.
This was a free? Oh, good for you.
There'd be no freebies
good
in
faith.
My world.
I know that.
So this is one of those cases of getting equal value for equal work.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty much a push. Damien, by the way, is contractually obligated to be here until 6 o'clock in spirit, in body, if not in spirit.
No, I plan to pick it up.
And then he's going to a hockey game, and then he's going to write a column for the Toronto Star, which will be a complete and total afterthought.
Oh, no, it's
going
to be really good.
Because you've got less time to think about it, right? By then, your thoughts will have
Wait
fixed.
A second. He just said a while ago he has no clue what he's going to write about.
He did say the phrase, mail it in, I believe, at some point. Didn't he?
This is one of those days where you write. I mean,
I got a good one. It's going to be good.
Have you written it already?
No, it's just starting.
No,
to,
no.
Only time will tell.
big picture stuff.
See, here's what I always figured. And actually, when I was scribbling columns for the internet, which is nothing like the high powered profile that you guys have,
I forgot. You did do that for a while.
Yeah,
didn't you?
Every once
Whatever
in a while.
Happened to that website? Like, if I went to it now,
actually, it's okay now.
Oh, is it okay?
Yeah, you're not. Yeah, the kids can even go now.
Oh, okay.
I think, unless it's changed in the last little while.
A reacquisition is in process.
How did those other guys manage to snatch it out from under your nose, though?
I just found that out on the weekend.
How it happened?
Fact. Yeah. How it happened.
And then how did they get turfed? Did they get turfed?
Well, my partner in the website, unfortunately, changed his email account.
Okay.
And the company that we contracted with to buy that website apparently sent emails to his old account saying, you got to renew. He never got any of those emails.
So, but how did the other guys who were in a very different type of website.
Adult entertainment?
I think so. How did they go in there and say, that's the one we want? I think they were piggybacking on your reputation.
Big yeah. fans of me.
Like, I mean, at least it means you can wear the hat again.
Anyways.
Well, not yet.
Because that was a small problem.
We've only got Brunt for another 10 minutes. Let's make better use of his time.
Well, I got 100 boxes of hats in my garage, too, that I was looking
yes,
at.
Yes, which potentially were...
Kindling.
Well, advertising.
That was the
adult
future.
Entertainment, yes.
Get the barbecue started. Here, throw a hat in there.
Well, I'm glad that's safe now.
I don't even know how they burn.
Safe for work now, as they say.
Anyway, so now we've wasted a perfectly good 3 minutes.
That was the best 3 minutes ever.
Which is less than what they're wasting over at Sportsnet right now, without us. Mike Sunnicks of the Phoenix Business Journal, Alan Ashby, Brian Burke, Dale Talon, Ken Hitchcock, all coming up a little bit later on. What do you want to talk about, Brian?
I'm merely the third wheel, Bob.
Are we pretty much done now, do you think? Is there a likelihood that anything more will be announced an hour after the deadline?
No, I think we're probably done.
Brian, do
we
have a count yet? We have a...
15 and 32 is the total.
Well, there you go. So
15 trades, 32
It's creeping
trades.
Up there, isn't it?
I told you it wouldn't make 20.
It is the least active NHL trade deadline in some time.
Brunt?
Yes?
What did I predict?
Which one of these predictions would that be? You've predicted a lot of things.
No, this is my prediction on the trade deadline. Will be the slowest, dullest, most uneventful
I think those,
trade
you,
deadline
you said,
of all time.
You said some of those things Friday, yes.
I said train wreck.
I think you said
smoking crater of a...
No, that's Brunt's. Brunt came up with that at 10 this morning.
I did.
Smoking crater.
And was I wrong? No. No, you did. No, you did mostly.
I don't even know what that is.
You did essentially write it off on Friday that on air. That's true.
I'm sorry, so there you go.
But it's not like trades didn't happen. They're all, it's quite an interesting trading season.
Yes.
It's just that the actual day was.
It's kind almost
of a bust.
You know what? It's almost like true. The and this is something Brent would be intimately familiar with. It's almost like the European transfer window,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes, that's
Which
true.
How long does that last though?
Is it 2 weeks?
Soccer, think, we're talking.
Yeah,
about
I got to think of what the winter one is. The Christmas one. It's
see, that's what I like.
I'm thinking it's a couple of weeks.
And this is my whole premise is let's narrow the window down. Now, I'd narrow it down to like. A day, but
so what about so your theory was before no trading in January and February,
right?
And then first day of March, 24 hours you can make a trade. But I mean, you could even freeze trading between say November 1st and January 31st, and then open a 3 week. Trading.
Yes.
No, but you. So and then we'd be on be every day wouldn't television be good for from 8 a.m.
Yes,
no,
exactly. Just that's right.
You're missing the premise.
Be bad for TV, but I'm wrong,
as
of
usual.
Course.
No, you're
TV
missing the
would
premise.
Expand to fill the vacuum. God knows.
No, the idea is to, like, because the National Hockey League is so fixated on creating these special events.
Right, but, and they certainly are.
But did they create this, or did it just create itself?
No,
I think this one sort of created itself.
No,
actually.
But that's, if you shut up for 2 seconds.
Okay.
I know you're only in here for a short period of time, but that doesn't mean you get to talk the whole time. So, the concept here is, let's create a 24-hour frenzy, yes. A real 24-hour frenzy, where there's huge anticipation. Anything could happen, because nothing can happen in the 2 months prior to. And suddenly, it becomes a big, big, big event. Like, whatever...
Bigger than this?
Whatever this would be nothing.
This is pretty nuts.
No, it's nuts, but it's created by the two networks.
Three, four.
Now four.
Yeah.
Well, the league could hold their own event, and they could have James Franco host it.
Looking
oh
slightly stoned.
Oh, my God.
Stoned.
Did you see him last night?
I heard it didn't go well.
No. Oh, my God.
What about Anne Hathaway, though? I like her.
Well, she tried to She's save lovely. It, but she didn't have any success in that.
Well, the right picture won best picture. That's all I care about.
I disagree with you.
Franco just looked like he would rather be anywhere else.
It was very good. Mm-hmm. But James Franco, no. Didn't
started off with a bang. They did the taped sequence they did at the beginning, you know, with
that was
dropping them into you know old movies and stuff. Was very creative, very very cute. I thought that worked great, and then unfortunately they went live.
Yeah,
did somebody
like
drop an F-bomb?
Yes, Melissa Leo did. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Why?
Best supporting actress.
Just out in an exultant one.
Oh
yes. But James Franco looked like he smoked a big fat joint about right about the best supporting actress,
dude.
Right about that point, and from the rest of the night on, he just was kind of. He was kind of a glazed.
Subdued.
Yeah, that's kind of what he looked like to me.
Anyway, so but you know, the league, if it wanted, could take over this. I mean, the league runs the draft.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
You know, if they wanted to turn it into, and as we joked, they could hold it outdoors, since everything good happens outdoors.
That's right. This is traditional. It'd be a throwback draft.
By the way, I've got this from Thing One and Thing Two, the two top dogs at Rogers Media.
I thought they were away.
No, I know, but I communicate with them through the spirit world.
Channeling them.
And yes, and they are getting set to announce that failing a format change in the playoff in the trades deadline structure next year, Rogers Sportsnet's deadline coverage will begin at 2:55 and will end abruptly at 3.
Based on what they've seen,
yes. So 5 minutes.
How much of that do we get?
All of it.
Excellent.
So Millard, Kiprios, the rest of those dopes, they're all out of business.
Man.
By the way, it's the least activity for a trade deadline since the big year of 99-2000.
Where there
when
were
we
12.
Thought the world was going to end anyway, so that's
yeah,
why
that's
there
right.
weren't any trades.
12 deals, 23
12
players.
12 deals that year.
Why bother trading if the world's going to end?
And then it went crazy. 31 last year, so half. Half.
But they were all junk. I remember last year vividly. I mean, there were just a crapload of trades of who for who.
Yeah, that's okay.
I mean, you know, I don't know whether this year's quality was better than last year's quantity, but...
You know what? At the end of the day, people like trades.
Yes.
Sure they do.
And they like to talk.
And I think that's been one of the unfortunate realities of the salary cap world, is that there have been fewer trades and fewer interesting trades and fewer hockey trades, as we like to call
them. Yeah, that's the new...
You know, my two guys for your three guys.
I don't know if there's fewer trades, but you're right.
There are definitely fewer trades.
Well, but... There are a lot of cap-driven transactions.
Yep.
Right? And those are never fun.
And there used to be, you know, you'd get a couple of deals in November and December, you know, somebody deciding they had an opportunity. So, to me, the NHL has kind of let that get away, that generates interest in my mind, and By the nature of the cap, you don't see it as much.
We were talking earlier about the Ottawa Senators on TV, and their what appeared for a period of time to be a complete dump, and then suddenly became a
humana,
a retooling, if you will. Which begs the question: did the owner step in here, and did he neuter this general manager? Because it appears, don't you agree that it appears that there was a change in course?
I don't know what the course, if the course was to take it right down to the foundation and start all over again. I think if I was the owner of the Ottawa Senators, I think that's a dangerous course to take. I'm not sure I would do that.
You risk alienating a fan base that is at best fickle.
Well, there's not as big a corporate sector. It's a government town. The tickets cost a lot of money. It's never a gimme. It's not like Toronto or Vancouver even. It's not a gimme where you can just sell out the building. So if you're not competitive there, people do kind of look at it and say, well, I don't know if you can say, give us 5 years, which is kind of what you're looking at.
Yeah, but take a look at what they've got. I mean, is this a hockey team? And I've heard some, I think it was McLean opined that it's not that bad a hockey team. Is it?
It's really a pretty good impression of a bad hockey team.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I mean, I don't see where not training Alfredson, not trading Spezza, keeps your fan base when it appears to me you're looking at not being in the playoffs for at least a year, maybe a lot longer.
Well, let's start. Who's the goaltender?
Maybe this UFA Craig Anderson they picked up.
You think that's? But that's. Again,
but
that's,
he could go but, sign with someone else. He could go sign with Toronto
that's
if he
right.
wants.
Sure and that's could. The building. You know, that's got to be step one. You know, for any franchise these days. And well, yeah,
except just, Philadelphia.
Well, and
except
Philadelphia. I mean, it's funny, you know.
Yeah, yeah, no, historically and now you're right, yes.
Well, you know, in the fall, I advocated, said, Senators, why are they doing this? They're not going to win with what they have. They had two goaltenders, Brian Elliott and Pascal Leclerc, who are both gone.
Yeah.
And I think at some point in all of this, what I think is interesting is that Brian Murray's made a bunch of calls, and a bunch of them haven't turned out. They invested in Brian Lee. He was going to be their defenseman of the future. They invested in Jason Spezza. Now, some of these were pre-Brian Murray, and some of them, you know, they've made a bunch of decisions that have all gone south. And well, now they're going to entrust this to him, and it appears, and now your inclination is that Gene Melnyk has stepped in and said, "Whoa, I don't like what you're doing." But if you don't want him to do it, why would you let him be the one who traded
well,
Mike Fisher?
And understand, this is not, I'm not getting whispers from anybody.
This is theoretical.
This is pure theory. It seems to me that there was a change in course. Maybe there wasn't. Maybe this was the idea. Get rid of these guys. Once we get rid of those guys, that's as far as we're going
right.
to go. Of course, the other option is the general manager starts dealing all over the place, and the owner goes, hang on a second here. Just a second. Before you entirely blow this thing up, I got to put people in the seats because I don't want to lose my ass here. And we know that you can get down to 14,000 people going to Ottawa Senators games in a big hurry. And I might argue with you, that's what you're probably going to get next year with this collection. Now, having said that, why wouldn't you trade Alfredson and Spezza? If you're going to go, why not go?
I don't know. Spezza's not tradable, I don't think, with that contract, though, is he?
But why wouldn't you trade Alfredson and Phillips?
There you go. Those
well,
the
Phillips
two.
Is another guy. And instead of trading him, they re-sign him?
Yeah.
Huh?
That's what I'm not getting it exactly.
And see, that's what I'm saying to you is that it's whatever the picture was, I don't see what it was unless it changed.
Well, that's a clear statement, though, signing Chris Phillips saying, we are not going to be Edmonton.
Correct.
Yeah, we're going to go a different whatever. Well, there is another path, I guess. There is another path, which is...
But how does Daniel Alfredson fit into that path other than...
Sentimentally.
Sentimentally. Like, we want him to end his career as an Ottawa
Senator. And it was brought up today that I think by Stephen that they do have the All-Star game next year. And, you know, it's no fun if you are horrible and your team's hosting the All-Star
game. Okay, but look at their lineup now. It looks pretty horrible. Now, they may not be the 30th team in the NHL, but they might be 27th.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference?
Well, I do think it's interesting that the Leafs, who declined also to do the Edmonton rebuild and have done their own, have been criticized everywhere for, you know, the Kessel deal and for the way they've gone about it by declining to do the lose for five seasons and then try to win again. And now Ottawa is pretty much saying they're going to do that too.
It would appear. Yeah.
So, you know,
What do you think? They're looking down the 401 and seeing, hey, look, at the Leafs are only 5 points out of a playoff spot. Maybe we can do that too.
I do think Ottawa's different. I do think there's a softness in the market that they have to be careful of. And the other thing, this would be the second time round for this.
To go right down to zero, you mean?
To go right, because they started at zero, and Ottawa. It took them 11 years to make a conference final. And then when it all finished out, they didn't win the Stanley Cup. And so now you've got to convince those same fans, stick with us, we're going to start again, we will win the Stanley Cup.
But you know what, Donald, people who watched a team, watch people try and build a team around Alexander Daigle and Radek Bonk and understand the...
Alexei Yashin,
maybe understand that can be a flawed theory.
Yeah.
That if you draft high and get guys and who so you think are blue chip guys that...
And so maybe hard to sell it instead of the, we'll turn this thing around faster because we can.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this question. If Spezza was made available, would the Toronto Maple Leafs have had interest?
No.
Why? Because he's a center?
First of all, he was available last summer to anybody, and they couldn't get a decent offer. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you now have a clear and present need for a centerman who can set up your 40-goal scorer in Kessel, who's at 25 or 6.
But I would say their need or their interest would be even less. Because at this time last summer, they didn't have the season of Mikhail Grabowski that they've had this year.
No, but Grabowski's not playing with Kessel.
No, but, you know, I mean, but you
don't you need a guy to get Kessel the biscuit?
Yeah, I wouldn't say. I wouldn't bet on it being Jason Spezza.
You just don't think he would be that guy?
I don't see it.
Like, if he's anything, that's what he is, though. He's not a sniper.
No, he's got a big shot, but he's not a sniper. But
he doesn't score a bunch of goals, but he is a pretty decent digger playmaker.
Jason Spezza's a talented guy.
Yes. Yep.
I think his shortcomings are he's not a physical guy for a big guy.
True.
He doesn't skate that well, and he can be at his worst a turnover machine.
Oh God, yeah,
he can be a maddening guy.
Yeah, just and so talent, absolutely. Puck, handle the puck, shoot the puck, good vision, all that sort of stuff. But the things that he was doing 3-4 years ago, he's still doing. And so at $7 million a cap hit, that's tough to take.
Yeah.
Brent has laundry to do, and so we're going to let him go. Thank you for sticking around. It's been a long day.
I loaned you the tie.
Yeah, thank you very much. We're going to be here for another hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, my.
It's going to be really good, though. You could just stay and listen.
I'll just hover outside the studio.
Like Nelson.
Yeah, like Nelson. My nose pressed against the glass.
Well, why don't you go back to Sportsnet and help them out?
They're dying. They're still
there.
Going.
Look at them.
Look at them dying. Look at Channy. Looks like he's nodding off. Thank you, Brent.
You're welcome.
See ya.
I'll see you soon.
Whenever. Stephen Brunt, formerly of the Globe and Mail, now of Sportsman. Damian Cox is going to stick around. Much I can do about that. Alan Ashby, we're going to switch gears for a bit. Alan Ashby is going to just talk about the Blue Jays and their inability to score any runs. Mike Sunnick of the Phoenix Business Journal on hockey, but off the ice. And then the last hour of the show will be all hockey for you pucks. Brian Burke, Dale Talon, Ken Hitchcock, maybe others. It's primetime on The Fan, Toronto.
Raceline Radio with Eric Thomas. Tonight at 11. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Minutes past the hour. McCowan and Cox on the radio program. Switch gears. We've been on hockey since 9 o'clock this morning.
I was going to say, I think this is a bit of a stretch to go to our baseball people to get their thoughts on the NHL trade deadline.
No, we're not going to talk about the trade deadline.
All right.
What we're going to do is we're going to address the plight of the Toronto Blue Jays,
the winless, the flightless.
I can only look at the facts as they are. Haven't won a game. Scored one run. I mean, it looks bleak.
Full out panic. Call Pelly.
Well, clearly someone has to pay the price for this ineptitude. And Alan Ashby's been watching all this, and he's in the best position to decide whose head must be separated from their body. Here's Alan Ashby. Who would you fire? Clearly somebody needs to be fired right away.
Well, I think I'm the one, the way it sounds with your intro there.
Well,
go ahead.
You know, if the shoe fits, Ashby, you know, I hold you responsible.
Yeah, it has been bleak to this point. I think it's worth finding some tall bridge and jumping right about now.
Well, give us your we're funning you because we understand that this doesn't mean a hill of beans, and whether they score runs
actually
or
means
don't
less
score
than
runs.
A hill of beans.
Less than a hill of beans. I mean, if they'd scored 19 runs a game, you know, we wouldn't be. Well, yeah, we probably would be getting ready for the parade. But what have you seen? Have you seen anything that means anything so far?
Not a thing, quite frankly. I did not see today's game. You know, for me, honestly, I watch to see what guys basically look like over the course of the spring, especially the final week. We haven't seen any of Aaron Hill yet. He's been out, and you've seen a little bit of Adam Lynn. He swung the bat well. I mean, if you're looking for some of that, Jose Bautista hasn't gotten on track yet, and you know he will. Actually, watching him take batting practice, I walked into the ballpark a couple of days ago, and somebody was taking batting practice from 400 feet away from where I walked in, and they were just hanging out deep line drives all over, and I thought, is that Bautista? And sure enough, it was. So, you know, he looked good right away in the games. It's been thin to this point, but it did take the big bat of Mike McCoy to finally drive in that first run today. So, what do you assess?
Well, compared to when you play, how ready are they to go at this point in the spring? As I said, compared to you, are they? Because we know in other sports, there's so much more training that goes on in the off season. Are baseball players the same, or are they doing other kinds of training and then they get to spring training and really start swinging the bat, throwing the ball?
No, it's very much the same. I think these guys are much better prepared than we were in any playing day of mine. I think, you know, as years went on while I played, I finished playing in 89, and guys were pretty well ready to play baseball. They were working out in the off seasons through the 80s, that sort of thing. But I really believe these guys come in probably overtrained at times, especially in the weight room. You do want to be as strong as you can. You have to maintain that throughout the course of the long season. But I think you can overtrain, and I think hence you see some of these rib cage muscles getting pulled during batting practice early on, some of the throwing issues that can come up. But the guys do everything they can to be in their very best shape. I really do have to laud today's player, whether it be baseball or any other sport. They work awfully hard. They take it extremely seriously. But injuries are always an issue, and you're looking at a little bit of that right now.
With Alan Ashby, one of the more interesting things to watch, maybe the most interesting thing to watch, will be the developments at the front end of the pitching rotation and at the back end in terms of the closers. Right now it appears that there are, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Alan, but four candidates for the last two starting rotation spots, Sobchinski, Lich, Drabek, and probably Reyes. And if that's true, Zach Stewart is eliminated. Is Stewart just a case of being like maybe 1 year away?
Yeah, I think that's the case. The guy that's pitched Double A and done so effectively, and I think probably because you're looking at a little group there anyway. If you throw Scott Richmond in there, and I know the story today did not include Scott Richmond's name from John Farrell, the skipper's conversation yesterday. Which surprised me a little bit. Honestly, I spoke with Scott Richmond the first day I got into camp, and Scott's kind of effusive about the way he feels. He feels that everything is ready to go. And frankly, when he's on his, when he's healthy and on his game, he's capable of being one of the five guys in a rotation. So I would have my eyes looking at him as well. But yeah, yesterday we got to see Sobchinski pitch two great innings. I mean, even with that, I don't know what you really say about it. Two really good shutout innings. And Jesse Lich pitched two shutout innings that weren't quite as great in terms of just sharpness in the strike zone. But they were shutout innings nonetheless. Jojo Reyes got touched up a bit today. Apparently he was wild against the Phillies. And I think that's going to cost him if that continues very long into the spring. To me, Sobchinski and Jesse Lich are the guys that buy for the fifth spot. To me, Kyle Drabek is the four starter going right into spring training. But that's just me. I saw enough from Kyle Drabek late last year, and also combine that with the way he pitched in the minor leagues to believe this guy is ready to pitch on the big league level. He's right now has the second best stuff on the staff. And so, you know, I'm a little bit surprised to see his name as one of the candidates for the back two spots in the rotation. But that's the story as it goes.
Every manager brings their own I don't know, environment, climate, atmosphere with them. And I'm sure John Farrell's is very different than Cito's. I'm wondering specifically, though, it was years of joking about the way Cito looked at pitchers and comparing them to position players. Now you've got a former pitcher as the manager. Do you think that changes a little bit?
Well, that's intriguing. People for years have said, former pitchers don't make good managers. Bud Black was the manager of the year in the National League last year, former pitcher. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I buy into that sort of thing. There apparently has not been a great success story to lay on to former pitchers as managers, but I really think you can throw that out the window. When I met, and I really just met John Farrell the other day, I found myself impressed. He's a big guy, so he brings a presence. And on top of that, he's very intelligent. I think he's going to articulate things maybe better than we've had in the past. And I think that's important, not only in terms of speaking with the players, but with the media, to present your views and the reasoning into moves or lack of moves during the course of a ball game. I think it's very important that you have somebody that articulates well to the media, to the fan. And then you get a better sense as to what's going on, why things are going on. To me, that's a big step forward.
As a former player, if you walked into a clubhouse and John Farrell was giving the speech in the dressing room, locker room, you'd be inclined to listen. He has a presence to him. I don't know how to describe it, Alan, but he definitely has a presence. Would you not say?
I completely agree, Bob. And because he's a former player, because he's a guy that shows that he's an intelligent guy. And I don't want to imply that other people haven't been, but he is. I think he brings all of that. He's been an executive, a minor league director already,
right,
in his young life in professional baseball. So he's got a track record, though he has never managed in the big leagues. And I think that is a little bit of an issue to this point. But I will say that players early on in this camp have been impressed the way the camp has been run. We're not into July. We're not into August yet. We haven't seen managerial decisions made. But players like what they've seen to this point. I think they are impressed. I think they are in a position where they're going to sit back and listen very attentively to what this guy says. And I think basically you're talking about a young club anyway, a club that is likely to be inclined to do so.
Well, we assume that sooner rather than later the offense will get in gear, and some of the guys that have minor bumps and bruises, Snyder among them, will get going, and all things will be as we expect them. In the meantime, enjoy your days off there in Florida. I know that there's probably more of those than there are working days during spring training, but we appreciate you coming on.
That there are. I certainly appreciate it as well, and you would just hate the golf that's available down here right about now.
Ashbury, bring your clubs and bring money when you come north.
I would love to do that. In fact, I will do that. Money will be...
You and I and Martinez will go out there and whack it around and chase some weeds. Alan Ashby, voice of the Toronto Blue Jays on the radio, and joining us from spring training where things are just really getting going.
Yep.
When we come back, what is the situation in Glendale? This is actually a significant week. The Goldwater Institute has been saber-rattling. The NHL wants to know if they're planning a lawsuit. The city of Glendale would like to know if they're planning a lawsuit. Are they? Mike Sonnix of the Phoenix Business Journal comes our way when primetime continues on The Fan, Toronto.
Blue Jays pitcher Brett Cecil joins Jeff Blair tomorrow morning at 10. Now, more of Bob McCallum and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Sixteen before the hour. The future of the Phoenix Coyotes once again in doubt, and I mean, like maybe more in doubt now than ever, because of the bond issue.
Explain it real quick to people?
Yeah, several weeks ago I said that I'd been told that the bond issue in Phoenix had failed, and effectively it has. We are past the date where the NHL had planned to announce the deal's done, Hulsizer's the new guy, and the Coyotes will live on in infamy.
And until they can sell these bonds, this transaction cannot go forward.
Cannot go forward because there's a little over $100 million involved in the bond purchase, and that money would be taken by the city of Glendale, given to Mr. Hulsizer as a thank you for keeping the team here. Mr. Hulsizer would then take that money, along with about $1.70 out of his own pocket, and send that over to Gary Bettman and say, here's your money for the team. and that thus would the deal would be concluded. The problem in here, the fly in the ointment, is this group called the Goldwater Institute, which is sort of a... an overseer of...
Watchdog.
Yeah, watchdog is a perfect phrase.
You know what? It's a thing that you can see is more prevalent in the U.S. because they're a lot more focused on taxes and stuff than we are often here in Canada. And basically, they're there to make sure that governments don't do things with your tax money they're not supposed to.
Right. The Arizona Constitution, which is not a newspaper, by the way. It's the actual constitution of the state of Arizona, apparently prohibits the government from giving gifts to businesses, which is intriguing because I don't know what all, you'd have to think that governments do that all the time.
Mm-hmm. You mean like grants and, you know, that's
all that, I would think all kinds of stuff. In any event, they are saying that if, in fact, the city of Glendale sells these bonds and provides the proceeds from that sale to Mr. Hulsizer or effectively anybody else, that breaches the Constitution, and they will file a suit. Now, City of Glendale, the NHL, would like to know if they really are going to or whether they are just saber-rattling. And up until, well, yesterday, I don't think the city of, or the Goldwater Institute had told them. In fact, they'd be surprised if they
were saying they don't have all the information. So.
Mike Sonnix is with the Phoenix Business Journal. He's been on this program on numerous occasions to discuss this very, very situation. And he's with us now. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So have we heard from the Goldwater folks? Or do you think we are ever going to hear? Are they ever going to stand up and say, yes, if you do this, we will slap an action on you?
You know, it's got to come at some point, I think. I don't know if they're waiting for the deal to go through, the bonds to go through and the money to go to Hulsizer and then the team to be sold to take action. You know, sometimes you have to wait for an action to happen to have standing. I don't know if they're waiting to see what the interest rate is and the debt is on the bonds, because that could impact whether it violates the gift clause also. If Glendale's taking a bath on this because of a high interest rate, then maybe their legal standing is better, but you know, Hulsizer and his guys want to see something pretty soon.
What would you want
Goldwater to make a decision? I mean, I think it's impacting what the bonds sell for.
Well, that assumes that the bonds are saleable. Now, I am told, and I'm comfortable in saying that the price that is out there for the bonds right now is 8 points. Now, what makes that maybe even a little bit more appealing is that 8% interest would be tax free. So, you know, you pay $100 million for the bonds, you're going to get $8 million a year tax-free because they're government bonds. Would you think that would be above the threshold?
Maybe. I mean, I think they originally Glendale was looking at 4 or 5.
Right.
And now it's, you know, 8, maybe 9 at the top. And so I think that's creating some concerns. So if they can get Goldwater to back off, then that maybe brings it down somewhat, and gives them some wiggle room in terms of a legal challenge. And it's kind of ironic that Goldwater's threatening to sue on the gift clause, and it's Goldwater that's pushing the interest rate up, which could, you know, kick in the violation. So it's kind of a catch-22 there.
Just so our listeners understand, why would the threat of a lawsuit from Goldwater push up the interest rate on the bonds?
I guess it could just totally squelch the deal completely, and you know, there's more risk there. So I guess that puts Glendale in some financial jeopardy if everything falls apart. You know, the arena's empty. You know, you're taking out bonds on something that you're not recouping any money on. Obviously, the bonds are also, I guess, backed on the parking revenue. And so if the team moves, if this deal dies, they're obviously probably going to move. And then you've had these bonds out here that no one would be using, so it's pretty complicated. But I think those would be the main factors and the risks involved. And, you know, and Glendale's, you know, faced some downgrades recently, just because of the economy here and some of these other projects that aren't happening. So there's a lot of questions there on what would happen if they sue and this thing falls apart.
I was told that that we are getting very close to a deadline, whether it's self-imposed or otherwise. What have you heard in that front? Like, we are talking a matter of days.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, too. I think a couple days. You know, obviously, we've said this before down here, and then the can gets kicked along. But I think there's some indications that Holsizer wants something to happen. There's obviously some other teams out there that are available. A number of teams that somebody could go by if they're interested. And I think you're looking, you know, it's March 1st. We you know, people thought the end of the month how many times. And so, yeah, I think, you know, a few days, a week, and there needs to be some action on this. And you know, if Goldwater doesn't want this deal to happen, they're certainly standing on the sidelines is helping that too.
Thanks, Mike, for joining us as always. We'll watch Absolutely. With interest over the next 48 hours. That's cool. Mike Sunnix of the Phoenix Business Journal, by the way, just to put it in perspective. Mr. Holsizer slated to buy the Coyotes for $170 million with help from Glendale's $197 million assistance package. Think about that. He's going to pay $170, and Glendale's going to give him $197 to pay $170. Good deal, I think. The break, and then back to hockey. Primetime will continue on The Fan Toronto. Pretty good day on the markets to open the week. TSX gained 84 points to 14,136. Dow was up 95. NASDAQ, just a point, but nonetheless up. Gold, $1,411 an ounce, up $2.30. Oil, down $1.01 as tensions ease in the Middle East. 96.87, and the Canadian dollar gained another 74 one-hundredths at 102.92. Skyrocketing. Mike Eppel joins us. A rally for a second consecutive day. And the markets end February with a pretty strong monthly performance. TSX up 4% for the month. The Dow gained 3% for the month. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and look what happened today. The price for oil fell again as everybody's sort of taking the whole Libyan political crisis and putting that to the sidelines now. And everybody piled back into stocks for a second day. And we've got the TSX close to a 2.5-year high and up by better than 4% for February. And this was the eighth month in a row that our benchmark stock index has posted a gain, Wall Street posting its third consecutive monthly advance, and sizable gains for February. And there's still reports that there's money sitting on the sidelines waiting to come in, and we're well within, you know, range of record highs for all of these major market indicators. So you've got the uncertainty on one hand from what's been going on overseas. Lo and behold, though, the North American equity markets continue to propel higher on the expectation the economy's improving. Plus, we had a hostile takeover play in the mining sector today with Equinox trying to buy out Lundin Mining for $5 billion. So all in all, a very good start to the week.
Quickly, the Canadian economy outperforms in the fourth quarter of 2010, and that boosted the Canadian dollar today. It now sits at its highest level in 3 years at 102.92.
Yeah, almost 3 cents above par. And tomorrow, the Bank of Canada sets a decision on interest rates. Not going to change interest rate policy tomorrow, but you have to wonder, after the fourth quarter GDP, which was well above forecast, do they start changing their tone and signaling higher interest rates? The prevailing wisdom, according to the currency, is that we're going to hear something a little different tomorrow morning.
Overall, TSX gains, Dow gains. It was a pretty decent day. Mike Eppel of 680 News with the business report for us every weekday afternoon at this time on The Fan.